Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio. With us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the Higher Education Department here at Car Talk Plaza.
Yeah, well, as not everyone knows, but you well know that I happen to have a doctoral degree.
Of course I know. I mean, that's why we call you Dr. Stoopy.
Exactly. And that means that I had to write a doctoral dissertation many, many years ago.
It took you many years, too.
Which I'm sure it's gathering dust and has never been read by anybody.
Of course
not. Even me. But I ran across this list by D.R. Thomas, a list of dissertation topics that were rejected before they even got off the ground.
Oh, really? I can't wait to hear them.
Well, I'm gonna give them to you. Here you go. These are rejected dissertation topics. You ready?
Go ahead. Start, man. I can't. The suspense is killing me.
Here's one. The lighter side of Stalin.
I would have been interested to know what that was.
See, you would think that somebody would want to read that.
Me for one. Maybe just one.
Nobody wants to read it. How about this one? Leibniz, Schopenhauer, Feuerbach, and Wittgenstein. A guide to pronouncing them. See, now that's one. No one's going to read that.
Well,
okay.
I think we might have done it already. We might be done.
Okay. Foucault's Merlot. The problem of Dionysian textualism and subaltern power discourses on Ernest and Giulio Gallo bottles. See, that sneaked up on you.
It did sound deep at the beginning.
Here's another one. Textual determination and the inevitability of your finishing this sentence. Security in the Caribbean Basin as viewed through the eyes of Bullwinkle J. Moose and Rocky J. Squirrel.
I didn't know they were in charge of Caribbean security.
These are doctoral dissertations now.
Maybe.
Here's another one. Vagueness, ambiguity, and another thing.
whatever it is.
Challenges in grammatical applications, semicolon, the flagrant overuse of semicolons in dissertation titles.
Of course. Well, look, if you have a question about your car or your PhD thesis, then give us a call. Our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, guys. It's Richard here from Greensboro, North Carolina.
Hi, Richard. How are you?
Good, thanks.
So what's going on?
I got a 2001 PT Cruiser. Okay, I've had it from new. When I drive along with my window open, I hear a sort of clicking, tapping noise coming from the front tire, almost like you've got a pebble stuck in the wheels.
Yeah.
Now the funny thing is that as I make a left-hand turn, the noise gets louder, okay? But as I make a right-hand turn, the noise gets quieter and almost disappears. Now, bearing in mind, in North Carolina, we have four seasons, too cold in the winter and too hot in the summer to have the windows down. But I only hear it twice a year. I think I've had it 18 months, but we're in the fall again, so I've started to hear it again. I want to know what the problem is.
In the summer you don't hear it?
Yeah, because the windows are up.
The windows are up and the AC is on and
correct.
The fan is running at full speed. So it's a pretty subtle noise.
Yes.
And it's been there for a long time?
I'm thinking we're at 18 months now.
You're a patient guy, Richard.
Where are you from, Richard? You have a strange accent here.
Yeah, the UK originally.
What part of the UK?
Birmingham.
Uh-huh.
Tommy knows someone from Birmingham, but Birmingham, Alabama.
No, not Birmingham, Birmingham.
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 Anyway, yeah. this noise that you hear seems to be coming from one of the front wheels. Can you identify which one?
Yeah, the driver's side.
The driver's side.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's coming from the left side. And when you turn to the right, you say the noise gets less severe?
Yeah, and if it's a real sharp right turn, it actually disappears.
Really? Well, if it were, for example, if it were a wheel bearing, and and you're sure it's coming from the driver's side, if you turn to the right, the noise would get, in fact, worse.
Okay.
it disappears.
I know that. I'm trying to get Richard to rethink. Yeah, so you're sure about this?
You want to change his mind about this.
But in these 18 months that it's been doing this, it hasn't gotten any worse, has it?
No, no.
That's interesting.
And it certainly wouldn't be a pebble, because a pebble certainly would have come out.
Yeah, well, the first time I did check, I thought, oh, that's a pebble. And I actually looked at the tire and I couldn't see anything.
Well, and even and if it were, it wouldn't go away by making the thing turn. What's making it go away when you turn is perhaps something in one of the axles.
Yes.
And here's what I think it is. It's perhaps one of the constant velocity joint boots. This is a front-wheel drive car.
Yes.
And it might be the something as simple as the clamp on the boot that's making this noise. And when you shift the suspension by making the car make a right-hand turn, because the weight of the car gets thrown to the left, you're altering the configuration of the lower control arm insofar as its position in comparison to where the axle is. Mm-hmm. And it may be that whatever is hitting goes away. I'm guessing it's something as benign as the clamp on the CV boot on the driver's side outer CV joint.
Okay.
That's what I think it is.
Really?
Do I need to worry about it?
No, eventually that
wheel will fall off. And then you won't hear anything. No, you'll hear something.
I think eventually that clamp will get broken.
Okay.
And when that happens, grease will spew out all over the place. It would be nice maybe to have it looked at. And I think if anyone puts it up in the air and maybe runs it in the air, they might not be able to see, in fact, where it's hitting because the suspension is now... unloaded.
Yeah.
But they may be able to see, in fact, where the thing was hitting. There may be a shiny spot on the control arm or some such thing.
Okay.
That's the best guess I can come up with, Richard.
Okay, then I'm going to get it checked out.
All right, but the fact that this is going on for 18 months makes me feel that you're not likely to do anything too soon.
Maybe by
next summer.
Maybe next spring, yeah.
All right. Keep us posted.
Thanks.
Thanks for calling, Richard. Bye-bye.
Bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Debbie from Columbus, Ohio.
Hi, Debbie. Is that with
Debbie, with an I-E or a Y?
An I-E.
That's what I got.
So what's going on?
Oh, I have a Honda Civic 2003.
Okay.
And this March, we had a snowstorm that I was caught parked in. And ever since I did kind of, a process to get out of the snow, my car has been making kind of an odd noise.
So you were driving through the snow?
No, I was parked in the snow.
Oh, you were parked.
And then you tried to force the car out without shoveling.
In my defense, it was at the airport and it was 10 o'clock at night.
Debbie.
You don't have to defend yourself.
No explanation necessary. If you did something stupid, you did something stupid.
So there's your car in the snow. You get in the car and you drive away.
No, you don't drive away.
No.
You go, boom,
you go boom, 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 boom.
I rocked back and forth for probably a half hour before a nice guy came along and helped me out.
Is this a stick shift car?
Stick shift.
Okay, so you put it in first, and you tried to roar through, then you backed up, and you just kept going back and forth, back and forth, running the risk of burning your clutch out. But...
yes.
Okay, so you finally got out.
Yes.
And then what?
Well, and I'm not sure when I first noticed it, because the noise at first was very intermittent, but it was kind of a rattly noise coming from the front of the car, like a rattly or vibrating noise, but...
But.
Since then, a friend of mine that is somewhat knowledgeable about cars has figured out that it only happens at 2,700 RPMs.
Right.
Ooh,
very good. So it makes no difference what gear you're in.
Right.
When you first gear going from 0 to 20 miles an hour, at some point you go through 2,700 and you get this noise.
Yes, that noise.
Yeah, I don't think, Debbie, fortunately, I don't think this has anything to do with your blasting out of the snowbank.
Oh, good.
We'll discuss the new clutch you're going to need, and that's the result of having bulled your way out of the snowbank. But we'll answer your question first. It's possible this may have had something to do with that, but if it's coming from way up front,
yes,
I think it's the heat shield that covers the exhaust manifold. Okay.
Heat shield that covers the exhaust manifold.
There's a heat shield around the exhaust manifold to keep other things that are in the vicinity of that thing, like the radiator and the radiator cooling fan.
To not get too hot.
From getting melted.
Yeah.
Because the exhaust manifold is hundreds of degrees. And it's possible that one of the bolts that holds it to the manifold has rusted off. If the car's 6 years old now, it's possible that you have a loose bolt or a rusted bolt, and that's causing that thing to go, nah, and it's fleeting like that. And you can find this out easily. If your friend,
yes,
your knowledgeable friend, can do you a favor. You can sit in the car with the engine running, the hood open.
Sure.
Okay. And rev the thing up.
Rev it up to 2,700 RPM.
Okay.
And with the hood open, your friend might be able to touch this heat shield with something like a screwdriver handle,
uh-huh,
and get the vibration to stop.
Wouldn't use your own just finger.
I don't think I'd use my finger.
Finger that you don't need much.
So your friend can do that. If it turns out not to be that, your friend can go farther down the line. There are heat shields all over the exhaust system.
Okay.
If one of those other heat shields is loose, that could be the result of trying to blast out of the parking spot.
But the important thing is that it's not going to cost a lot to fix it.
No, but the clutch is.
Oh.
and whenever you try to get your car out of snow like that using the transmission and, revving the engine,
yes,
and letting the clutch out,
yes,
you're really abusing the clutch when you do that.
Oh.
So in the future, it would be nice if you carried a little snow shovel in the back of the car.
Okay.
Yeah, so you could shovel your way out. If you had been able to shovel for 10 minutes, you would have been able to drive out.
Yeah, but that requires getting out of the car.
Oh, yeah, and getting wet
getting
and cold.
Getting your feet cold.
I know.
It's better to just sit
you
there.
You did the right thing, Deb. The clutch manufacturers of America salute you.
Exactly.
See you later.
Right, thanks.
Take care.
It's interesting. People would rather spend $500 or $1,000 and not have to get out of the car.
I think if she knew, she would have been down there on her hands and knees digging that snow out.
I doubt it.
You doubt it. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Peter calling from Long Island.
Hey, Peter, what's going on in Long Island?
I have a 1948 Jeep.
Ah, really?
Yeah, it's a CJ2, the kind that you see in World War II movies.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, no doors, no top, etc.
Yes, not unlike the ones they make now.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they haven't done much.
Well, it doesn't look pretty, but it has been extremely reliable for driving over fields and in woods.
Were you in WW2 and just took the Jeep home when the war was over?
No, we've had it now for about 40 years.
Really?
Yeah.
40?
How did you come to get this thing?
Well, we inherited a farm property, and in order to travel around, we decided we needed a vehicle, and so
to get around the farm.
That's correct.
Yeah. Oh, so you bought it then at that
time? Yeah.
Yeah.
At a government surplus auction or something.
Well,
like that.
Well, it was actually a 48 Jeep, so it was a Willys, not
the original. Oh, so it's not a World War II.
That's correct.
It was a Willys. Okay. So now we've got your entire family tree in the background behind
us. Yeah, so what's the problem?
So the problem is it's been running great. So I started it up a couple of weeks ago and was carrying a big load up a hill and suddenly saw stuff coming out from under the hood, sort of a smoke, and I said, gee whiz, it must have popped a coolant hose.
Mm-hmm.
So
sure.
I opened the hood up, and lo and behold, it's not a coolant hose, but lots of smoke coming out of a vent for the oil filler pipe.
Oh. Really?
Now, the engine continues to run smoothly.
So this smoke is like exhaust, I would imagine.
Yeah, I thought initially it might be coolant, but it didn't smell like coolant.
What does it smell like?
Well, it smells more like exhaust.
Yeah, I think it is exhaust, and a couple of awful things come to mind. So you say it runs smoothly.
Yeah, it ran smoothly. So I drove it back in, stuck it in the barn, and said, well, I guess I better find out what's going on.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, so my first thought was that maybe you had a burned a hole in a piston, for example, or you had a blown head gasket or something like that. But the more I think about it, I think that maybe you blew out a couple of piston rings. So what's happening is while the combustion is taking place in that affected cylinder, it isn't being contained by the rings. You know how the rings work?
Yeah.
So the rings go around the pistons and basically take up the slack between the piston and cylinder wall so that the piston is kind of loose in there and the rings make sure that the stuff can't get past, especially when the explosion takes place.
Right.
Well, your rings have probably broken. And exhaust is getting passed. And, of course, once it gets into the crankcase, it's under tremendous pressure. It's gas that's been expanded because of the, you know, the combustion process, and it's going to go someplace, so it's blowing out this hose.
So is this likely to be in all four cylinders or just in one?
Well,
probably one.
Yeah, probably one.
It only takes one.
Right.
But I think you're going to have to start tearing the engine apart, I'm afraid.
Okay. Well, that's...
Well, I mean don't be rash about this.
No, winter's coming. What better thing to do than to take this engine out, put it in the dining room. Well, the holidays are coming. Wait till the holidays are over.
Yeah, well, you can just about take this engine and put it on a dining room table.
I know
you could.
Yeah, no, I think it's time for you to learn the fine art of engine rebuilding at the dining room table.
At the dining room table. Exactly. I mean, that's how most of these things get fixed.
Are you married, Peter?
Yes.
You won't be for long. Yeah, this is how it starts. But it'll be a fun project. So you'll be calling us. Let me see what's June. Yeah. You'll be calling us about
June,
April, May, or June for little tips about what to do with the extra pieces.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
See, Peter.
All right.
And we got some good ideas for that already.
Right.
Bye bye. Good luck, man.
Yeah. Bye.
Hey, do you happen to remember last week's puzzler?
No. Do you remember it?
Well, of course I remember it. It's my job to remember it.
Yeah? Well, it's my job to forget it.
that's why you're always employee of the month. Anyway, this week's puzzler was a math puzzle that took place at a classic car auction.
You know, I have a classic car auction going on right now on my front lawn.
Well, that's only because you stopped paying the trash haulers bill. You got to get rid of those things one way or another. Anyway, we'll have the whole story and more of your car questions, too, when we come back in just a minute.
So please stay tuned.
You do the boogie to the V8 Ford, and you can run your race, so all aboard. Flip on the ignition and you turn on the light. V8 Ford, it run out of sight. V8 Ford boogie, it's so hard to hold. A V8 Ford boogie, you're doing it to the rock and roll.
And even though Dante grabs a notebook and sketches an idea for a tenth circle of hell whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.
Hey, if you find yourself thinking, you know, this show gets worse every time I hear it, why not check out some classic shows from our archives, like when we used to be good?
When was that?
It's just a figure of speech, you know?
You can download any show from the Car Talk archives at cartalk.com. Just click where it says, listen to the show.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and, of course, the answer to last week's puzzler, which I know you'll really remember, but you're saying.
Yeah.
And I did say this was from my classic car series, but it really doesn't have much of anything to do with cars, really.
Yeah?
Well, a little bit. Last month, Tommy dragged me, kicking and screaming, to one of those classic car auctions.
Mm.
I guess he wanted to see what it would take to get his Fiat up to auction grade, so to speak. Well, later that day, he cut his car up into little pieces and set them on fire, so I guess you can draw your own conclusions on what he learned. Anyway.
It was a fun time.
It didn't take long either. Rust cuts easily.
Yeah.
Well, including the two of us, there were 30 potential buyers present that day and dozens of cars. And here are the details. You ready? Pay attention.
Yeah.
10 of the buyers bought fewer than 6 cars. 8 of the buyers bought more than 7 cars. 5 buyers bought more than 8 cars. And 1 buyer bought more than 9. And here's the question. How many of those 30 buyers who were there that day bought 6, 7, 8, or 9 cars?
Yeah.
Well, you could attack this by beginning to draw diagrams and say, okay, this set is the people who bought 7 cars or more. But you could look at it another way.
Yeah.
You've got 10 people who bought fewer than 6 cars. And you've got 1 person who bought more than 9 cars. Okay, well, that's 11 people. Well, we had 30 buyers to begin with. And if we subtract those 11 who we know didn't participate in the 6, 7, 8, or 9 cars,
yeah,
we have 19 buyers left, and all those 19 remaining buyers had to have bought the 6, 7, 8, and 9 cars. And 11 people didn't. That's the answer. How many of those people that were there bought 6, 7, 8, or 9 cars? 19 people.
Oh.
Ah, now he sees it. Oh, the light dawns. Do we have a winner?
That's good. I always thought the question was,
who bought Tommy's car?
How many bought 6? How many bought 7? How many bought 8?
No, that's just you didn't remember the puzzler.
That's right.
Do we have a winner?
Yeah, we do. The winner this week is Robin Kelly from Paducah, Kentucky. And for having her answer selected at random from among all the correct answers that we got, Robin gets a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com, with which she can get a copy of our latest book called Ask Click and Clack.
You know, the book was originally going to be called Tell Click and Clack, where where angry callers and customers could tell us what they really thought of us.
Yeah, yeah. But 3/4 of the book had to be redacted due to foul language.
So instead we have Ask Click and Clack, where we answer questions about cars. Seems a little safer, you know?
Much more civilized. Yes. Much more.
Less inflammatory, I think, too. Anyway, there's a new puzzler coming up, so stay tuned for that. In the meantime, if you have a car question, please give us a call. We're very lonely here. Our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Coley calling from Gunnison, Colorado.
What's your name, Coley?
Coley.
How do you spell that?
C-O-L-I-E. The nickname for Nicole.
Oh, Nicole. Okay. And where are you from?
Gunnison, Colorado.
Gunnison, Colorado. Got it. What's
got
up?
It. All
really?
Right.
Okay.
So, we think. We got it. We get the Colorado part anyway.
So what's up, Nicole?
So you can't call me Nicole.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
You're Coley.
I'm going to call you Coley. I'm sorry.
All right. Go ahead.
All right. So I have a 96 Subaru Outback, and for the last, 2 weeks, when I shift between first and second, or second to first, there's a grinding noise and feeling. It's almost like fingernails on the chalkboard.
Fingernails on the chalkboard? Oh, really?
Well, that's not a grinding noise. That's a screeching noise.
Well, it's right? More the feeling I get when it happens.
Oh, in other words, it feels, you have the same kind of squeamish feeling that you would get if fingernails were being dragged across the chalkboard, even though the noise isn't quite the same.
Well, does this happen when you are shifting from first to second?
Mm-hmm. Or second to first.
Or second to first.
When you're in the process, your foot is on the clutch,
mm-hmm.
and you're moving the shifter from first to second.
And you haven't taken your foot off the clutch yet.
No.
No, in fact, you haven't even gotten it into gear. You cannot get it into gear without making this noise. Is that true?
Yeah, but it doesn't happen every time.
No, I bet it doesn't. Is it more likely to happen if you're trying to accelerate hard?
Yes.
How can you be accelerating hard if you're in first gear?
No, no. In other words, if you wound it out in first gear, trying to shift into second, that's when it's most likely to make the most noise.
Is what he said
no,
right?
No, it doesn't always happen. I mean, sometimes it's just what I'm, not going that fast. Or
no, no, but is it more likely to happen if you're trying to, if you had, no?
No.
Yeah. Don't ask hard questions.
I know. It's these hard questions, Coley, that give us the stall time necessary to make up an answer that's believable.
And it happens.
Well, I have a second part to my question.
Great.
Yeah.
Because I don't think you're not going to like the answer to the first part.
Okay. Well, my car has 205,000 miles on it.
Wow.
So I'm wondering if there's, what's wrong with it and if it's worth it to get it fixed because there's so many miles.
Well, that's good. Well, what's currently wrong with it is that your synchronizers and your transmission are on the way out. And the synchronizers are what match the gear speeds when you're shifting between one gear and the other so that you don't get gear clash. Okay. And when those bronze synchronizers wear out, that what you're hearing is the gears clashing against one another because the synchronizers can't match the speeds, and you get that ring sound.
Yeah, that's it.
That's the sound. But it's not surprising that you have it because you have 205,000 miles And maybe the transmission oil has never been changed in this thing.
And you've been driving like a nutcase for all these 205,000 miles.
Or maybe the oil, the transmission oil drained out somehow, you know, it leaked out and it never got replaced. And that would lead to the rapid demise.
Oh, that would do it.
So you need, in all likelihood, a transmission rebuild or transplant.
Yeah.
You know, but considering the age of the car, there may be a rejection issue with a transplant. I think what you need to do is... She's laughing, all right. you need to find out what else the car needs.
What do you mean? What else it needs?
Well, so you'll know how much you're going to get in for. No sense spending $300 on something if you have to spend $500 on the next thing and $1,000 on the next thing.
Uh-huh.
How long have you had it?
I've had it for 4 years.
Oh, so when you bought it, it already had 150,000 miles on it.
Yeah, but I bought it from a guy who sounds like he's from the Puzzler. He went to, you know, the auction and he bought a bunch of cars and he fixed them up and he did a great job. The only thing that he didn't do was the transmission.
Well, I think you got to go now for a complete workup, as they say. You need like an EKG, a stress test, you know, the whole thing, blood work.
Yeah.
And you need to find out if this is a viable car, because I'll tell you, as wonderful as these cars are, 205,000 miles is a lot of miles for any car.
Yeah, and you could be looking at thousands of dollars to fix everything that needs to be fixed.
And you up for that? Spending thousands?
No.
So, okay, now
but let's just pretend that it's the transmission. How much do you think that
would cost? Well, you could get a used transmission, probably one with a lot fewer miles on it, for, you know, maybe $300 or $400 or $500.
Okay.
You know, then another $300 or $400 to put it in, so maybe $800.
Okay.
On the other hand, you could ask us your third question, which is, what car should I replace? You know, what car should I use to replace this?
I'm not quite there yet in the process.
Okay, well,
you're not, but the car is.
The car may be asking
because
you.
Because 200,000 miles is a lot of miles.
I know.
The first step is to get the entire car checked out and find out beyond the transmission what else it needs.
Okay.
And then when you stop crying, you can begin to think about what car you want to get next.
Right.
So I think that's it.
Coley, we wish you the very best.
Hang up the phone, call your guy, get right to work on it.
After I stop crying, then I will.
All right. See you later.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, I wasn't very nice, was I? Stop.
Well, you were okay.
I mean,
you got to tell the truth. I mean, that's why people call us. They don't want to have things.
They don't want it sugar-coated.
Exactly. They want the truth.
So we should stop spinning the wheel of automotive misfortune. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, gentlemen. This is Nathaniel from Seattle, Washington.
Hi, Nathaniel from Seattle. What's up?
I've got a 93 GMC Jimny that I got for a steal, and it's given me a lot of miles. I was driving back from Boise across the mountains, and the people in the car next to me were, you know, signaling to look down, you know, And I pull over, and there was, like, fire coming from underneath my car.
Fire?
Yeah.
From underneath?
Was there a problem?
There's my problem.
Well, could you tell exactly where the fire was?
It was in between the two front tires.
Really?
Yeah. There was a lot of smoke as well.
How did you put the fire out? You took your jacket off.
I have a little fire extinguisher.
Oh, good. I'd get another one if I were you, just to be on the safe side. So this thing is, this has got a million miles on it, right?
160,000
miles. I'm guessing that this thing leaks a fair amount of oil.
Well, the dipstick always seems to read it's got oil. I just had an oil change.
Oh, okay. Well, it could be. Well. So some other fluid caught fire. There were only, if it had been gasoline, I think you wouldn't be calling us now.
No. Your heirs would be calling us now.
Right, exactly. So it wasn't gasoline, and you probably would have smelled gasoline. I'm guessing that it could be motor oil, even though you're not losing a whole lot. But it could easily be transmission fluid or power steering fluid.
Yeah, but if this happened once, it should happen again.
It will if you drive it far enough.
It
won't happen around town. You've got to get it on the highway.
Exactly. It was the same trip. I was only halfway through my journey.
Ah, okay. Don't laugh. No, I'm serious.
Had you bought another extinguisher by then?
No, I used the hose when I got home.
Oh, you let it burn until you got home.
Did you see any residue behind? Was it maybe a piece of something that got stuck on the exhaust system?
I haven't really fully investigated, and I doused it pretty good because I was, you know, done driving. So yeah. It hasn't moved since then.
Oh, so maybe it's something. Maybe it isn't a leak. Maybe it's something. Oh, I'd hate to think what it could be. Maybe it's something that wound up on getting lodged right on the exhaust system.
You didn't crawl under there, huh?
No.
You're going to have to.
Well, you got to crawl
under
there.
It may be a jacket or something.
Well, I just bought this, so it could be a variety of things.
Yeah, it could be some piece of material that's catching fire.
You really have to crawl under there and see if there's anything obvious.
Okay.
You know what to do? Where are you now?
I'm outside of my house near... My truck, actually.
Well, go start it
why
up.
Why don't you go and just crawl underneath for a minute, make sure the handbrake is on, and see if you can see anything under there, and call us right back. Or we'll put you on hold.
Okay.
Yeah,
I think
you're going to find something under there.
You might not like it, but you're going to find...
And if you don't see, like, a jacket under there, see if there's any liquids floating around.
Yeah.
I can do that.
It's going to be something like cloth. Cloth or the animal from which the cloth came, or something. You know, it might be a raccoon.
Okay, go ahead.
Any smells? Does it smell?
Yeah, it stunk.
It stunk. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
All right. We'll wait for
Nathaniel. Nathaniel will be waiting anxiously for your report.
Oh, I'm here at it now, actually.
Oh, you are.
Yeah.
Oh, you're already outside.
I'm already underneath the truck.
All right.
In wet leaves.
Is the thing in park?
It is.
The parking brake's on?
The parking brake is on.
It doesn't work probably, but it's on. Okay.
So you're right up front, and what do you see? Nathaniel, are you okay?
You see something?
There is something up there.
There is something up there.
Yeah. I can't tell what it is, though.
Is it trying to bite you?
It might have at one time.
You can't reach it?
I don't know if I want to.
All right, look.
I might be able to get it from under the hood.
Yeah.
Okay, it's up that high.
Okay, here we go.
Open the door. Key in the ignition.
No, don't start it.
It was, I think it's a squirrel.
Oh, there you go.
I don't know. It looks like it's furry. Maybe a hood to a jacket.
Oh, it could be a squirrel, you know, one of those jackets.
It is. It's a hood to a jacket.
It's a hood to a jacket. It's got the furled thing around it.
So right. Like you knew it was a jacket. How did you know that?
Wow.
That's it.
Mystery solved.
Mystery solved.
Jeez. Might even be one of your jackets.
Yeah. Anybody you know?
It's a woman's, it looks like.
A woman's jacket.
It's just a hood.
It's just a hood. So there's no one in it.
I think the rest of it is pretty much the smoke and the fire.
Yeah,
the rest of it could have been responsible for the previous fires. So the fires probably would have gone away eventually, even if you hadn't discovered it, because you were down to just burning up the hood. The next trip would have burned up the hood.
So all you got to do is pull that out of there, and you're all set to go.
What about my wiring and all that?
Don't worry about it. No, you got to get it out. You can be delicate. You can get it out delicately, but you've got to get it out of there, because if it does burn up your wiring, you're going to have even more problems.
Wow.
Nathaniel, did you ever think you were going to go on this kind of an adventure?
No, you didn't. Neither did we. Well, this is great.
I was enjoying my coffee.
So were we. See you, Nathaniel.
Thank you guys so
much. Make sure you wash your hands afterwards.
You got it.
Okay, good luck, man.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
He is a lucky guy.
He is. He was a little bit timid at first. It's a good thing we were with him. He would have chickened out. All right, look, it's time for us to take a little break.
Yeah. And when we come back, what kind of puzzle do you have for us? I mean, is it from your Wheel Traveler series, for example?
No.
Your filtered tap water series?
Oh, of course not. No.
How about your eggplant parmesan recipe series?
I mean, could be.
What are you going to come up with this time?
Well, it's funny you should ask, because this week's puzzler is from my athletic supporter series.
That was my next guess.
Right, of course it was. Well, stay tuned. We'll have the puzzler and more of your calls in just a minute.
It's a Cadillac that you like. Maybe it's a Lincoln, I think. Like the feel of an Oldsmobile. I got more that you'll be sinking.
And even though tear-shaped boulders run down the faces on Mount Rushmore whenever we say it, this is NPR National Public Radio. We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the new puzzler.
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought this was appropriate. You know, we're right in the midst of the baseball season. I mean, the pennant races are in.
Baseball?
What? What's the matter?
It's over.
It is?
You didn't notice?
I missed it?
Yeah. I mean, have you seen a game in the last couple of days?
No.
Couple of weeks?
No.
No.
It's over?
There's no more baseball until next year.
Oh. Our guys are out of it?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Well, anyway, I'm using the puzzle already.
Anyway, okay, go ahead.
I just happened to miss by a few months.
All right,
that's
well, maybe right. It was a month ago.
Exactly.
What's the difference?
And this came from a fellow named Harold Pressburg, and this occurred to me, says, after looking at the box score of a game between the Mets and the Cards. Okay. He was checking the stats for a certain pitcher of the Mets, a relief pitcher, who came in at the start of the seventh inning. He says, and I found the following. You know, you look at the box score, it says things like innings pitched, one.
Ah.
Hits, zero. So he pitched an inning, allowed no hits.
Yeah.
Runs, one.
Ah.
Earned runs, one. Strikeouts, one. Bases on balls, zero. So in other words, he pitched one inning, and of course, in doing so, he recorded three outs, gave up no hits or walks, and was still charged with an earned run.
Yeah.
How is this possible? Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on an Apollo Gold Light Blue Full Spectrum Light Box with patent-pending Blue Wave Light Technology, wide treatment field, advanced diffusion optics, of course, programmable operation, backlit touchscreen, built-in lithium-ion battery, and send it along with 15 cubic yards of Caribbean beach sand to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
But right now, if you have car questions for us, give us a call. We're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. A lawyer on Car Talk.
Howdy, boys. This is Tracy Ring from Oak Ridge, North Carolina.
Hi, Tracy from Oak Ridge. What's up?
I am calling because I have a 2005 Jeep Wrangler,
mm-hmm.
and it's got about 36,000 miles on it, and it's sick. I was driving the other day to meet my lovely husband for lunch,
mm-hmm.
and I thought I'd take the highway to be a bit faster.
Yeah.
And I guess they are repaving the highway, and right about the curve that I was going into, it's actually called Death Valley.
Ah.
The car started to just wobble violently and shake. I thought my wheels are falling off, and I'm trying to not panic and slow down at the same time. And I guess that went on for about 50 yards, and I was probably doing 35, I think, on the highway at that point.
How fast had you been going when it...
Probably about 60. I think it's 55 through there. So.
Which means you were really doing 75. Okay, so you're doing 75.
And were you in the process of a turn?
It is the point where I was on the road, I was going into a curve.
Nah.
My lovely husband, he didn't think anything was wrong with it until he proceeded to drive it for the next 2 days,
uh-huh.
and it occurred to him, and then the whole world fell apart because there is an issue then.
Yeah,
there is something wrong. I mean, with only 36,000 miles, you know, the most likely thing is tires.
Yeah.
Well, he did get on the internet and did some research, and tires were one of the things that came up. He saw that it was called the death wobble, is what they have termed it online.
Well, you got to understand that the suspension on this. We had a call earlier from someone who owns a 1948 Jeep, and the suspension on these two vehicles is pretty similar. And in fact, the original suspensions were designed by the Conestoga wagon people.
<Uh-oh>.
So it's a very unsophisticated suspension. It has something called a live axle in the front, which means this vehicle does not have independent suspension.
Okay.
And as such, you know, when the right front wheel experiences a bump in the road or a pothole, that gets transmitted
everywhere,
but especially to the other front wheel.
Okay.
Because, you know, it's a live axle, which means that there is no independence of the wheels. None of the four wheels is independent. So when this situation occurs where you put this thing into what's called a harmonic, where you're making a turn and you're applying forces to that thing that they were never designed to take, especially at a speed that it wasn't really designed to travel at, you begin to add forces to an already unstable dynamic situation. And when you do that, you set up that thing the death wobble?
Yes.
The death wobble. And it really is, there's nothing wrong. You couldn't cite one part as being worn out, except that the problem is that the whole suspension is inadequate.
Oh, great.
And it's really inadequate for driving the thing at highway speeds.
Okay.
I think there's a term for this. What is it called? A death trap. Well, at least in my opinion, it is. And by the way, this wouldn't have happened if you were driving at 55.
Oh.
I mean, all of this gets exacerbated and hastened when you're driving at higher speeds.
Okay.
Yeah.
It will happen more often as the vehicle ages, because then you start to throw in things that are worn out. Some of the bushings will be worn out. The ball joints will be worn out. The steering damper will be worn out.
And then it'll happen every day.
And then it'll happen all the time.
So then I just need to make sure his insurance is up and all that.
Exactly. And then you need to start driving at lower and lower speeds. You'll go from 55 to 50. Eventually, you'll be driving at 12 miles an hour. But enjoy it for what it is. I mean, it has limitations, but as long as you drive it sanely, you're all right.
Okay.
And sanely means living at home most of the time.
Okay. Well, yeah.
I don't understand how they've gotten away with this all these years. They designed the car in 1942, and they got the same vehicle. They just keep making the same thing over and over.
I think it's called smoke and mirrors. I don't know, but the thing is, the thing says fun.
You sit
behind the wheel of a Jeep, and it's like you're on safari.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, even if you're going to work, there's an element of fun thrown in. Like, geez, maybe I won't go to work today.
Or maybe I won't make it to work today.
Oh, thanks.
Well, that too. Well, enjoy it for what it is, but it's not the kind of car whose handling you can rely on in difficult, tricky situations.
Okay.
You know, and that's all that's wrong with it.
Okay.
Say it, Tracy.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
Oh, I just deflated millions of Jeep owners. But I mean, everyone who owns a Jeep knows.
I'm not so sure. I mean, if you went out and spent $40,000 for a vehicle, you'd think it was a brand new thing.
Well, every brand new car is great, except when you start to bump and bump, you know. I don't know. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, it's Alistair calling from Rowayton in Connecticut.
Hi, Alistair.
Hi.
From where in Connecticut?
Rowayton.
Rowayton.
Yeah, it's a little town near Norwalk.
Okay.
Near what?
Norwalk.
Really?
What's going on? How can we help you?
I just recently bought an Audi Allroad, and I'm having a few problems with it. The main one is when you turn on the car, the P, the R, the N, and the D start flashing.
Yeah.
And it feels like you don't have a first or a second gear when you drive off. It's kind of revving out a bit.
Oh, really? So it's in, like, winter mode, maybe?
Well, it does it when the engine's cold. It doesn't do it when it's warm. And the way I've been fixing it is I just turn it off and then turn it back on again, and it's fine.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
give it to me again. I'm not sure I understand what you said.
So when you
start the car.
When you start the car in the morning, the P, the R, the N, and the D on your display start flashing at me.
And that's the only thing that's flashing.
That's the only thing that's flashing.
Yeah, I think that's telling you that the transmission is in some kind of a limp home mode or something.
Oh, okay.
That there's something wrong with it, and that's why it's flashing. Is the check engine light ever come on?
It didn't, but it also has started coming on as well. But it wasn't coming on at first.
Uh-huh. Right. Well, you need to go and have the thing scanned.
But it fixes itself after. It's like a computer. You turn it off, and then you turn it back on again, and everything's fine.
Everything's fine.
Yeah,
you kind of rebooted it.
Yeah.
My brother does that with his Fiat. He gets out, walks around the car, kicks the license plate a couple of times, twice. It's called rebooting, I guess, right? And it's fine.
And it keeps on running.
I mean, this. I'm guessing this is probably a software upgrade that they're going to have to do. There's something that's sending a signal that's not allowing the transmission to get the right signals from the computer. So there's some sensor that's off, or there's something wrong with the computer.
Yeah. Mm.
So, I mean, the fortunate thing, Alistair, is that now that the check engine light is on, even if it weren't on, there was probably something called a pending code. Because once a fault is noticed, it begins to gather data on how often that fault is present and the conditions under which it was present. And when it happens enough, the computer will store what's called a code, a hard code. And when that happens,
it'll
even before
tell you
it happens,
exactly what it is.
But you need to fix it, because at some point you're going to turn the key off and turn it on, and it's not going to make a difference.
Do you think that it would be covered under the warranty? Because I've only had the car for a month.
No, of course it's covered under the warranty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would take it back immediately.
Oh, yeah.
How many miles are on it?
40,000.
So you bought the car used, obviously.
Yeah. There's been a couple of things that go wrong with it.
Did you buy it from an individual or from a dealer?
No, from a dealer. Yeah.
You're all set.
Yeah, I mean...
Just take it back and they'll fix it.
Yeah, Connecticut must have some consumer protection laws, but just in case... Bring a baseball bat. you never know. Good luck, Alistair.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye. 888 Car Talk. That's
a car with only 40,000 miles on it. Isn't that something?
Yeah. What was the last car that you had that had...
Yeah, I know when it was.
What was the last new car you bought?
1964.
You cheapskate. 888 Car Talk. So what happened to you?
About
everything. I mean, here you were, an upstanding member of society. You were going to work.
Yeah.
And wife and a house and a family and a nice car. And
all that disappeared.
Okay. Well,
and that was it.
Yeah, let's go back to those dissertation topics. I think somebody may want to write one about you. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Rachel from Milpitas, California.
Today we have had more unrecognizable, unpronounceable... Where are you from?
Milpitas, California.
Milpitas. Milpitas, yeah. I got it.
Huh. Well, thanks for calling, Rachel.
So what's going on, Rachel?
I am having a problem with my 2005 Honda Civic and my husband.
Uh-huh.
Well, I don't know what we can help you with.
The husband is the big problem.
I don't know if we can help you with the Civic, but the husband, we got a shot at. Yeah, what year's the husband?
He's 1967.
Oh.
1967, okay.
Very smart, laser physicist.
Oh, physicist.
Laser physicist. No less.
But my car has a brake problem.
Yeah.
The brakes are going. And he says that he wants to do the brake job. Mm. Oh. And I say I don't want to end up a grease spot on the 101.
Well,
has he ever done this before?
He says that he's done 4 brake jobs before.
Oh.
If any of those people survived, can you contact any of them?
I don't know.
Were these vehicles that he owned?
Or his former wives owned?
I am after this happened.
Oh.
These cars predate our relationship. We've been married a year. I've never seen him do a brake job.
Okay, so this is previous girlfriends and or spouses. Or you don't know who it was. Will he divulge?
It could be anybody.
Could be, but he won't divulge to you who these people were?
I'm assuming he means on his cars.
On his
cars.
And
he's still alive.
Uh-huh.
Well, he's a smart guy. He's a physicist.
He is.
A brake job is not rocket science.
Is he doing any rocket science?
he does laser science. Well, he's really close.
You know, a brake job is hardly laser physics either, and I'm confident that he can figure it out. And
Really?
He sounds skeptical.
I mean, it's not the kind of thing that you can get terribly... messed up in.
Really?
Well, the good thing about
brakes. That's good news.
And you won't It's not a lot of things you can break. There's not a lot of things you can screw up.
But the things you can screw up could have serious consequences. The good thing about brake
jobs. If I hit the brakes and the car doesn't stop.
No, he's going to drive it for the first week. He's definitely driving this thing for the first week. You ain't getting behind that wheel.
So what you're saying is make him a crash test dummy.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, the good thing about brakes, I was saying earlier, is that you have an opportunity to do one wheel at a time. So when you're doing the right front wheel, if you forget how something goes, you can go and look at the left front wheel, which is exactly the mirror image of the right front wheel.
Yeah.
So you say, oh, that's where that pin goes. Oh, and that little clip goes there. Of course. And those bolts don't go there. They go here. And the truth is there are two bolts that hold the caliper on. There are two bolts that hold the caliper bracket on. There's one screw that holds the disc rotor on. And that's it.
And then I'm going to have to kiss his feet.
Oh, that's what you're really worried about.
That is so what I'm worried about.
Well,
why does he have to be good at everything?
I know.
Oh,
that's what my wife says,
too. Can't I just have a mechanic?
I know.
Well, yeah. I mean, some of us are just good at everything.
Keep dreaming.
Anyway, good luck. I'm confident he'll do a good job.
Thank you very much.
And if he does it, we'll come and visit you in the hospital. Don't worry. It'll be okay. Don't worry. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Well, it's happened again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk.
Me too.
Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin, the Barbarian, and David the Calves of Belleville Green. Our senior web blackie is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. And our production assistant is Aaron Wax. And our editor and dean of the shoe collection this week is none other than Catherine Frau Blücher Fenollosa. Our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor just back from the East Barbados, stuffed tomatoes, roast potatoes, beef tornadoes, sauce alfredos, calavados, and cafe fredos, fill your Play-Dohs and gain some weight-os, is John Pugsley Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our second shift meteorologist is Cloudy Overnight. Our food taster is Howard M. Burgers. Our used car salesperson of the month is Meg Meehan-Hoffa. Our class attendance monitor is Julie Verley. The desk clerk at the Car Talk Animal Shelter is Manny Katzenbach. Our pacifier supplier is Justin Casey Howells. Tommy's personal psychiatrist is Manny Luz Cruz. Our optometric firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the performance art majors doing interpretive dance in the crosswalks of Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. Don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
I really mean that. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. CDs of this show, which is number 846, along with Car Talk clothing, audio collections, and other Car Talk gifts, are available at 888-CAR-JUNK or by going to the Shameless Commerce Division of our website, cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, we bow to the inevitable.
What? We're quitting before NPR fires us?
No, not that inevitable. The inevitable changing of the seasons.
I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but it's time once again for winter driving tips.
Well, you'll be glad to know that I've already prepared myself for 0-degree weather.
Yeah?
Yeah, I bought a ticket to Miami.
All right. Well, for the rest of you, read up on our winter driving tips. They're available all week at cartalk.com. We'll be right back.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though hibernating bears open one eye and swat their radios whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.